Animal Companion. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Earl Stanley Gardner's book, The Case of the Careless Kitten. In the previous chapter, we learned that Perry Mason had led Lieutenant Drag to the body. However, no one could identify the corpse, which definitely irritated the lieutenant. Though Mason had suspicions about the body and its identity, he wasn't certain enough to commit. And now we begin Chapter 8. It was a good half hour before Lieutenant Drag completed his searching questions. By that time, the men had finished their examination of the body and the car. Drag was weary. "All right, you four stay right here in this automobile. I want to go back to the other car and check up on some things," Gerald Shore said as Drag moved away. Rather a searching interrogation, it seemed to me. There was an element of cross-examination in it. He would almost seem to suspect our motives. Mason was soberly thoughtful as he said, "Drag senses that there's something else behind this. Naturally, he wants to know what else it is." Shore said, very casually, "You didn't suggest to me that I should withhold any information which might seem trivial from Lieutenant Drag." "That's right," Mason conceded. "What specifically did you have in mind, Counselor?" "Oh, minor matters. Things like which enter into the general background, but don't seem particularly pertinent to the case." Shore asked, "Did you have some particular thing in mind?" "Lots of little things," Mason replied. "The poisoned cat, for instance. Helen Kendall's quick inhalation betrayed her surprise. Surely, Mr. Mason, you don't think that poisoning of the cat has anything to do with this?" And she motioned toward the parked sedan in which the body had been discovered. Mason said suavely, "I was merely mentioning it to illustrate the trivia in which I felt Lieutenant Drag wouldn't be interested." "But I thought you said the thing that you didn't want us to tell him was..." She caught herself abruptly. "Was what?" Gerald Shore asked. "Oh, nothing," Shore looked at Mason suspiciously. "I think the only thing I specifically mentioned," Mason went on suavely, "was something that I suggested by the way of illumination. Just as I mentioned the poisoned cat just now." "What was the illustration that you used?" Shore asked. "Helen Kendall blurted out, 'How about you not going into the Castle Gate Hotel when we drove up there tonight?'" Gerald Shore's body seemed wrapped in that rigid immobility, which is the result of a conscious effort not to betray emotion. "What in the world would that have to do with anything?" Mason said, "That is just it, Counselor. I mentioned it as one of those trivial details which might clutter up the case and unnecessarily prolong the examination of the witnesses. It's in exactly the same category as the poisoning of the kitten." Shore cleared his throat, started to say something, then thought better of it and lapsed into silence. Lieutenant Drag returned to the automobile carrying a white cloth bundle. "Open the car door," he said to Mason. "Move over, so I'll have a place to put these things. Now, I don't want anyone to touch any article here. I do want you to look at them carefully, but just look at them." He spread out the bundle, which proved to be a handkerchief upon which rested a gold watch, a penknife, a leather billfold, and a card case, a gold pencil, a fountain pen encrusted with gold, and on which initials had been engraved. "I have some theories about these things," Drag said, "but I'm not going to tell you what they are. I want you to tell me if you've ever seen any of these before, if any of them look at all familiar." They leaned forward to stare at the articles, Shore peering over Mason's shoulder from the front seat of the automobile, Della Street and Helen Kendall leaning over the back of the front seat. "They mean nothing to me," Mason announced promptly. "How about you, Shore?" Lieutenant Drag asked. Shore craned his neck, frowning thoughtfully. Mason said, "He can't see very well from that position, Lieutenant. Suppose I get out so he can look at them more closely." "All right," Drag said, "but don't touch any of the articles." Is it in order to ask where you got them? Mason inquired. They were done up in the handkerchief in a little bundle such as you see here and were on the seat of the automobile beside the body. Inside, Mason said, squirming around so that he could get out of the front door without brushing against any of the articles. It's all right to touch the handkerchief, isn't it, Lieutenant? Yes, we won't get any fingerprints from the cloth. Mason fingered the handkerchief. Good grade of linen, he said. A man's handkerchief. Touch of a rather peculiar color, isn't there, Lieutenant? There may be. As Mason slid out of the door, Gerald Shore, leaning over, exclaimed, Why, that's my brother's watch. You mean Franklin Shore? Lieutenant Tragg's manner was tense. Yes, Gerald said, his voice showing his excitement. That's his watch, all right, and I believe... Yes, that's his fountain pen. The initials FBS are engraved on it, Tragg said dryly. It made me think perhaps it might have been your brother's. It is. It's his. How about the pencil? I'm not certain about the pencil. Or the billfold? And the card case? I can't help you there. The knife? Gerald shook his head. But that's his watch, all right. Is the watch running? Mason asked. Yes, Mason said. Perhaps we could manipulate the handkerchief so we could look at the face of the watch. It's a plain, open-faced watch, Tragg said, but you'll notice there's a scroll on the back of the watch, a scroll made by the initials FBS. Highly interesting, Mason said. We might look at the face of the watch to see whether it has any added significance. The lawyer picked up the handkerchief, moved it around so that the watch slowly turned over. Mason glanced significantly at Della Street, closed one eye in a quick wink. Della promptly lowered her hands to the catch of her purse. Mason said, "That's interesting. A Waltham watch. There's something written on the dial. What is it?" He bent over the handkerchief. "Hold the spotlight there just a moment, if you will, Lieutenant." "It's a trademark and the description of the watch," Tragg said. Mason bent over. "That's right. The printing is rather fine. The word Waltham is printed in a straight line, and down below it is a curve, is a Vanguard 23 jewels. Notice that, Lieutenant? There's a winding indicator on the top, right by the figure 12. It indicates when the watch has been wound up and when it runs down. There are 24 hours on the dial, and you can tell roughly from the position of the hand how long since it's been wound, about 6 hours in this case. Rather interesting, don't you think? Tragg said, yes, it indicates that the watch was fully wound up about 6 hours ago, although I can't see the point and why it would have any significance. Mason consulted his own watch. It's about 10:30, he remarked thoughtfully. That would indicate that the watch was wound up around 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Exactly, Tragg said. But you'll pardon me, Mason, if I don't get very excited over that. Somehow or other, I've always noticed that when you start pointing out clues, it isn't because you're so anxious to have me become interested in the things you're mentioning as to keep me from becoming interested about some other thing which you carefully avoid mentioning. Helen Kendall grimaced over her shoulder at Della Street and in a loud stage whisper observed, I'm glad I'm not Lieutenant Tragg's wife. Mason looked at Helen appreciatively. She was coming on fast. The lieutenant isn't married, he told her. Mr. Mason, I'm not at all surprised, are you? No, Miss Kendall, I'm not, Mason replied gravely. They tell me that once... All right, Tragg, all right, carry on. That's his fountain pen, all right, Gerald Shore said. I remember now that he was very fond of it. Carried it in his pocket all the time, Lieutenant Tragg asked. Yes? Mason did slide out of the car, peered over the back of the seat to make certain that Della Street had interpreted his signal correctly. She had her shorthand notebook on her knees and was taking down the conversation. Mason took a pencil and notebook from his pocket and scribbled a series of figures. Lieutenant Tragg said, quite obviously, that is the body of Henry Leach. There's a driving license in his pocket. It shows that it was issued to Henry Leach, who resides at the Castle Gate Hotel. Evidently, he must have been a permanent tenant there. There are also some other cards in the wallet. It's Leash. All right, I know. Gerald Shore said excitedly, look here, Lieutenant. This man was going to take us to my brother. I think you can appreciate the extreme importance of clearing up the old mystery. Lieutenant Trag nodded. If my brother is alive and well, that is a matter of the greatest importance. It might overshadow the murder of this man. I feel that you should lose no time in running down every available clue. Trag's eyes narrowed. Now, why should that overshadow a murder? Shore said. I'm speaking as a lawyer. Trag retorted. Exactly, and I'm speaking as a detective. Shore glanced at Mason, then turned hastily. My brother was a man of some importance. I take it this man, Leach, who lived at a questionable second-rate hotel, was not. Keep talking, Trag said. You haven't said anything yet. Shore went on rapidly. Well, there might be a lot of difference in the legal situation. You see, well, I think you'll understand what I mean. Trag thought for a moment, then snapped a question. A will? I wasn't referring to that. You had it in mind? Not particularly, but it's an angle. Yes, Shore admitted reluctantly. It's an angle. Mason intervened with a suggestion. Look here, Lieutenant. Don't you think under the circumstances we're entitled to see everything that was in the pockets of the dead man? Trag shook his head emphatically. I'm handling this investigation on my own, Mason. You're entitled to see nothing. At least, Mason said, we should be permitted to go with you to Henry Leach's room in the Castlegate Hotel and see what you uncover there in a search. After all, this is a Gerald Shore's brother we're looking for, and a Shore should have some right in the matter. Gerald Shore said hesitantly, As far as I'm concerned, I have limited confidence in Lieutenant Drag's ability. I don't want to do anything which would interfere. However, if there's anything I can do to help, I want to place myself in every bit of my time and ability at the lieutenant's disposal. Trag nodded absently. I'll call on you when I need anything, Mason said. Trag, I was to go to the Castle Gate Hotel with you, and I want to see what's in this man's room. Lieutenant Trag shook his head in a gesture of finality. No, Mason, I'm going to run this investigation in my own way without any suggestion or interference. But you're going there now, Mason insisted. At least we can follow along at nope, Trag said. You're all done. Your car's parked down by Hollywood Boulevard. Mason, go on down and get in it and go about your business. I'll let you know in case I want anything. I'll leave a man here with this body. I want a fingerprint man to go over every inch of this car. Okay, Floyd, let's get started. And remember, Mason, I don't want you to try to follow me. You stay here and I'm going on to Castlegate Hotel. Lieutenant Trag gathered up the handkerchief and once more tied the corners together, making a compact bundle. Mason slid back into the front seat. Well, counselor, he remarked to Shore, I guess Trag doesn't want any of our assistance. You might drive me back to where I've left my car parked. And, he added in a lower voice, get started before the lieutenant changes his mind. Why, what do you mean? Shore asked, stepping on the starter. Mason said in a low voice, if I hadn't apparently been so eager to have him let us accompany him to Castlegate Hotel, he might have insisted on it. Shore turned to Mason defiantly. Well, he asked, what's wrong with that? Something else has happened that I thought we might want to investigate before the police stepped in. Matilda Shore is in the Exeter Hospital. She's been poisoned. Good God, Shore exclaimed, swinging the car into a quick turn. Helen, did you hear that?
I heard it,
Helen said calmly. Easy, easy, Mason warned Shore. Don't make it seem that you're too anxious to get away. Drive along rather slowly until the police car passes you, and that won't be long. That fella Floyd drives like the devil. They had gone about 300 yards when they saw the red spotlights in the police car blossom into ruddy brilliance, heard the sound of gears meshing, and then the big car came roaring up behind him. Pull over, Mason said, and let's hope he doesn't think things over and change his mind. The police car didn't even hesitate, but went screaming on by swaying into the first downturn of the long, winding grade. Mason settled back in the car. "All right," he said to Gerald Shore. "Put her in second gear and turn her loose." Well, this is getting interesting. The Case of the Careless Kitten by Earl Stanley Gardner. We'll have to find out what's going on either at the hospital or at the Castle Gate Hotel. And now we turn to some readings about the animals in our lives. This article is by Laurie Basis, and it's called Play with Your Dog. It's good for both of you. Take this as your signal to play with your dog. A new study published today in the journal Royal Society Open Science shows that extra playtime strengthens the emotional bond between owner and dog. While it may seem obvious, play is not fully understood in dog research, particularly for dogs that continue to play into their adulthood. This new study aimed to see if there is any direct connection between play and emotional bonds between dogs and their humans. Today, many dogs change homes into the middle of their lives. With rescue dogs, you don't have the advantage of growing up with your dog. Lena Roth, a study co-author and sensory biologist at Linköping University in Sweden, explained in a statement, "This means that you miss the so-called socialization window early in your puppy's life, which is important for relationship building. And then play can be a very good way to build a new good relationship, even with adult dogs." In the study, dog owners find out that a comprehensive questionnaire about how they experience their relationships with their dog helps to bring some of the information forward. Some of the questions include how often owners take their dog with them to visit other people, how often they confide in their dogs, or if they feel that having a dog is more trouble than it's worth. The team then divided the human and dog pairs into three groups. Group 1 played more than usual, while the group 2 trained more than usual with treats as a reward, and the third group was the control group, where their behavior would stay the same. After 1 month, the team then asked the owners to answer the same questionnaire again. Increasing the amount of playtime with dogs improved their pairs' emotional bonding. This is a great result that you can only dream of. It turned out that the play group improved their emotional bonding to the dog in just 4 weeks with a few minutes of extra play a day. The team did not do anything meaningful for training the dogs and the control group. According to the team, this shows how humans' views of their relationship with their dog does not say much about the dog's own experience in their relationship. However, the owners in the play group reported that their pets appeared to view their owners more positively and initiated the play themselves. Earlier studies show that the dogs typically feel better when they play and spend time with their owners. Additionally, the different groups received clear instructions on how to play with their train their dogs. This helped the team ensure that their owners actually played with their dog. "Just throwing a ball isn't enough," said Roth, "as we were after the social interaction between dog and human. The games we proposed in the study were, for example, tug of war, rough and tumble, chasing each other, hide and seek, peekaboo, or teasing a dog a little with your fingers. Ultimately, the most important thing for dog owners is to find a game that the animal responds positively and play time together is pleasant. Quality can also be more important than quantity. You don't have to keep it up at it for a long time with your dog. It's more about paying attention to your dog's behavior. A few minutes every now and then seems to make a big difference." This article, written by Laura Basis, Play with Your Dog. It's good for both of you. Well, that was about playing with your dog. This article is about a dog who actually has a job. Joanne Jeffrey writes, "Detection dog sniffs out close to 50 pounds of raw meat inside traveler's luggage." Darla, a detector dog at Canada's Toronto Pearson Airport, sniffed out a piece of luggage containing more than 48 pounds of raw meat. On X, Canada's Border Service Agency explained that the passenger with the luggage was coming from Egypt and was carrying over 22 kilograms of raw duck, pigeon, chicken, and rabbit inside the suitcase. In the post, the agency showed a picture of Darla sitting next to her haul. The food products were properly declared, so no enforcement actions were taken against them. We cannot disclose the name of the traveler as an individual's border and immigration information is considered private and protected by the Privacy Act. However, a spokesperson said that Darla had been working with them since 2023. They explained that her nose is perfect for stopping forbidden and regulated foods from coming into our country. On its website, the CBSA explained that travelers must declare any food, plant, or animal products, including raw meat, that they intend to bring into Canada. They note that these products may carry invasive species and diseases that can cause risks to Canadian food, its supply, economy, environment, and health. The agency notes that those who fail to declare any of the products can get a penalty of up to $1,300, prosecution, and detention of the products. Joanne Jeffrey wrote, "Detection dog sniffs out close to 50 pounds of raw meat inside traveler's luggage." And here's a story of another working dog. The article is written by Nicholas Rice. Hero Dog receives Paw of Courage Award from the American Kennel Club for finding a missing child, age 12. A Massachusetts dog is being hailed as a hero. The American Kennel Club, AKC, awarded the canine named Biza with the organization's DGNY Paw of Courage. Biza, who was 3 years old, helped track down a 12-year-old child who'd been missing for more than 2 hours in February. After following the child's scent for 2 miles, Biza was able to find the preteen and reunite him with the family alongside her partner, canine officer David Lundgren. Biza, according to the AKC, is a dual-purpose canine who's nationally certified through the North American Work Dog Association on patrol functions and narcotics. She enjoys long walks, playing fetch, and swimming in her free time. Along with Biza, another dog named Vishu also recently received the Paw of Courage Award from the AKC. Vishu, who works with Kankakee Sheriff's Department in Kankakee, Illinois, has assisted in open water search for drowning victims as well as missing persons searches for many surrounding police departments. She's also been certified numerous times through the United States Police Canine Association as both a tracking dog and a detector dog. The organization said that Vishu is trained to track and indicate an article for live persons and find human remains in various stages and states of decomposition. The Paw of Courage Award, according to the AKC, demonstrates appreciation for the dog that works do in the service of humankind. These two canines have demonstrated their dedication and commitment to keeping their communities safe every day, AKC Executive Secretary Gina DiNardo said in a statement. The American Kennel Club is proud to honor these two incredibly deserving canines, Canine Vishu and Canine Biza. This article, Hero Dog Receives Paw of Courage Award from the American Kennel Club for finding a missing child 12 years old. The article's written by Nicholas Rice. And this article asks the question, why does my dog stare at me? The article's written by Kathleen Clausen, veterinarian. Every dog owner is familiar with a sense of being watched. Dogs spend a lot of time staring at their owners, even if the owners find the constant attention a bit disconcerting. Sometimes it's obvious why your dog is looking intently at you. When you're about to take a bite of some delicious-smelling food, your dog is probably staring. On the other hand, they might be staring at you to tell you that they're not feeling well and need help. Other times, they seem to be staring at you for no reason at all. Even if you don't understand what your dog is looking at, your dog has a good reason to be watching. Sometimes it's to understand. They don't know what you're doing unless they watch. Dogs and humans have a special relationship. They naturally are inclined to be attached to their owners, and they take an interest in what humans do. Watching people is how they gather information about their actions. Or sometimes your dog may want something from you. Sometimes they use eye contact to ask the owner for something. Many dog owners are familiar with the intense stare a dog gives you to beg for food. Other times your dog might look at you to get attention because they want to go outside. Maybe they just hope you'll pick up a toy and play with them. And then there's something is wrong. In some cases, your dog might be staring at you in a pleading way. If they're hurt or sick, they might be staring in the hope that you'll notice their discomfort. If your dog is less active than usual and their stare seems glassy-eyed or unfocused, check for signs of illness or injury. Anytime your dog seems to be hurt or sick, you should discuss the situation with your vet. Sometimes hard eye contact is a sign of aggression in dogs. Dogs lock eyes with one another to establish dominance or to show aggression. If a dog gives this person a hard, steady stare without blinking, the dog is warning the person to back off. And also there's affection. Your dog might simply be looking at you with love. Dogs love their owners and they gaze at them with the doggy equivalent of heart eyes. You might notice that your dog's eyes seem slightly squinted when they look at you sometimes. This expression, along with relaxed posture, is a sign that they're giving you a look of love. If you take a moment to stare back at your dog, it can be a bonding moment for both of you. Mutual staring can be between dog and owner releases oxytocin. This is a hormone that gives you the feeling of love and well-being. You can learn to understand your dog's stare. If you pay attention to what is going on when your dog locks eyes on you, you can get a sense of why they're staring. Paying attention to their body language will give you additional clues about why they're following you with their eyes. Take note of what you're doing at the moment to figure out what's drawing their attention. Most of the time, if your dog is staring at you, it's because they consider you important and they just want to be part of whatever it is that you do. This article is called Why Does My Dog Stare at Me? And it was written by Kathleen Clausen, veterinarian. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be happy, everyone. Stay well. Be healthy. Bye-bye.